Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 129th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Ikhlas Ismail Ahmed, who is originally from Darfur, Sudan. Her family of five fled civil war, spent 2 years in Cairo, Egypt, before being resettled in Portland, Maine in 2005 at the age of 12. Ikhlas attended King Middle School, Casco Bay High School, and the University of Southern Maine, and now has returned to Casco Bay High School through AmeriCorps to teach English. What a treat it is to have you here. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Ikhlas.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You are from the western region of Sudan called Darfur, an area roughly the size of Spain. It was in the news a lot in the early 2000s for the genocide there. You were about 10 when everything came unraveled. I wondered if you could tell us about some of your memories of your homeland before the war.
Hi, Kate. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for having me on the show. Darfur is a beautiful region in Sudan. I had the pleasure of visiting a couple of times. My parents are originally from Darfur, so I still have grandmothers, aunties, uncles, a lot of my family members that still live in Darfur. The genocide started about 13 years ago, and the conflict is still going on. But what I remember the most about Darfur is how beautiful it is. Darfur is very green, surrounded by water, and the people of Darfur is what I know and remember the most about my homeland.
What is it about the people?
The people are very beautiful. They have beautiful souls. They don't care where you're from or how you look like. They always treat each other and people that they meet in a very kind way, and that's how I feel like this is where I get my kindness from the people of Darfur, because they're very friendly and kind and loving.
That makes sense. You're a very warm person as well.
Thank you.
It's contagious. After 2 years in limbo in Egypt, your family was resettled to Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to tell us about your first day of school here as a 12-year-old girl without any English yet?
Yes, I know. It's funny now that I talk about it, but at the time it was a very stressful moment in my life, I would say, as a new Mainer and also a person who has left almost everything that they know and loved and cared about behind and started their life all over again. At the time, I didn't have enough information about what's going on in Darfur. Because me and my brothers were really young, so my parents didn't want to tell us the exact truth of what was happening in our homeland. All they cared about is just bringing us to safety. But as I got older, I did my own research and I learned exactly what's happening in the region of Darfur. So to answer your question about my first day of school, it was a really rough day. Doing our initial orientation to the public schools, somehow someone forgot to tell us about the transportation system and how if someone gets in the bus, they shouldn't just get out of the bus right away without being stopped at the right location.
You were used to city buses.
I wasn't even used to buses. I was used to walking.
Yeah.
I walked to school when I was in Sudan. So for me, taking the bus, and my brothers took the bus, so they probably know how it works. My school was close enough to the house that I didn't have to take the bus to school. But yeah, so I took the bus, and somehow 7 a.m. the bus came and I got in the bus, and around 7:10 is when I got off at the bus stop, not thinking that, okay, is this is my stop or not. Even the bus driver didn't even stop me from getting off the bus, which is crazy to me now, letting someone leave without knowing this is their school. But I got off, and I was in the middle of nowhere. I didn't know my surroundings whatsoever. I did not know where I was at. So it was a really difficult moment trying to even find a voice to say to anybody on the street that I was lost and I was trying to look for my house or trying to look for my school.
Which would have been tricky too, because you didn't speak any English at the time, right?
Yeah, I did not speak any. The two words of English that I knew was hello and thank you. And I learned
good
those
place to start.
And I learned those two words in the airport and as we were coming to the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who taught you that?
The flight attendant, like every time she would say hello, thank you, and I just picked it up. Mm. Yeah, so it was a really rough day, the first day of school, and I got lost for about 7.5 hours from 7 a.m. until around 7:30 at night when the Portland police found me.
I think that sounds terrifying.
Yes, it was. It was terrifying.
Yeah, and you had said earlier your mom was distraught. Mm-hmm. Thinking she'd come all this way and then lost her beautiful daughter.
Yes, exactly. So when I finally made it home that night, my mom was crying. She was really, really upset and just didn't know where her daughter was. And she thought maybe she lost me since I wasn't home all day. Nobody knew what I was. The school didn't know because I wasn't at school. So nobody knew what I was. So my mom was just very fearful, and she was like, I lost my daughter. I didn't even lose her in this genocide and in this terrible tragedy that is happening in Sudan. Here I am losing her in the U.S. in the first week we're here.
Special kind of sadness and fear, I'm sure.
Yes.
So you told me that when you decided you would never be voiceless again was that day.
Mm-hmm.
You knew you would work hard to learn English, and I wonder if you ever imagined that you would one day be teaching other refugees English in the very same school system.
No, I didn't. I did not know. I just knew that the experience that I went through was very rough and was very sad for someone at that age to go through. And I was voiceless, that's for sure. I did not have a voice whatsoever. So I made it a mission of mine that I would go to school every day, even though I didn't understand what my teachers were saying, that I would push myself to learn my new language and to immerse myself in this new culture so that if I ever get lost again, I would have the voice to say, I am lost, help me get home. And also, I wanted to make sure that nobody goes through this experience that I went through. So the work that I do now is kind of something similar to that. I'm so thankful to be an AmeriCorps member. It has changed my life in a very positive way. Working as an AmeriCorps member, running the Make It Happen Center, which is an after-school program that helps multicultural and multilingual students be college-ready. But we do so many other things than just that. And for me, being a role model to so many students has been a gift, I think.
Yes. I imagine that feels really good to them, to see someone that looks like themselves.
Yes.
And somebody that can actually help and really knows what that feels like.
Exactly. I think when I was their age and I was in school, I wished and hoped that there would be somebody like me that has been through maybe similar experiences and someone that maybe speaks the language that I do so they can help me maybe understand the concepts better or get through my day just easier. But I wasn't fortunate. But so now they have me there and they can depend on me for something like that.
I think the Make It Happen program's especially wonderful. Having sent a child to college, I know what a steeplechase it is. You know, the financial aid forms, mm-hmm. the looking at schools, the figuring out what you want to study and how to get in, and the essays.
Exactly.
And having a center where the kids can get that help. Their parents don't know what our system is. They can't help them the same way that American parents do, or people who've been here a long time can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a complicated system.
It is. It's a very complicated system. And as you said, many of their parents maybe are not even English speakers yet, or their English might not be as strong to help them through the college process, which is a very long process. And also, maybe they haven't been through the college process themselves. They don't know what steps you need to take to be ready. So some of them are at a disadvantage. So that's where the Make It Happen comes in handy and helps a lot of those students who might need that.
Do you operate on volunteer help from the Make It Happen Center?
Definitely. I think Make It Happen wouldn't be Make It Happen without the volunteers.
They make it happen?
They make things happen.
Well, that's interesting, because right now I know a number of people who are thinking they'd like to be more helpful in the immigrant community. So this would be a hands-on way people could be effective.
Very, yeah. We always need volunteers. I mean, I have almost 125 students in my roster, and I'm just one person. So imagine that. The volunteers help me in so many ways. We have volunteers that come from here, from the University of Southern Maine, but also we have people from Bowdoin, from Colby College, people from UNE, people from SMCC, all of the local colleges that we have here. But also we have people just from community members who want to be a part and helping. And if anybody is interested, they could definitely reach out to me. Or we have our volunteer coordinator, Nanette and Candy, who are very helpful, and they'll definitely help somebody to be involved in the community.
Great. I'll link to that. But interested listeners could just call the Portland Public Schools or go to portlandschools.org and find your way to Make It Happen.
Great.
Yeah. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. My guest today is Akhlas Ahmed. If I were to read the list of her accomplishments and endeavors, it would probably use up the majority of our remaining time. So let me just highlight some key points. Akhlas is the founder of Darfur Youth of Tomorrow. She's a mentor in the Pasintu Children's Choir. She's the organizer of Project Malala. She's been recognized at the Kennedy Center, where she read poetry from her future book. She's a Seeds of Peace leader, a Camden Conference speaker, panelist, and speaker at rallies and throughout the region. Akhlas, never a dull moment.
Never.
What can you tell us about the Darfur Youth of Tomorrow organization, which you helped to establish? What's your inspiration to get that going?
Darfur Youth of the Future or for Tomorrow, it started about a couple of years ago with myself and my cousins here in the Portland area, where we wanted to provide a space for a lot of genocide survivors, especially for girls and for women who have been through horrible stuff in their lives and have seen a lot of things that they're not capable of telling others. But we wanted to provide that space for them where they can feel safe to talk about their experiences, because we believe that telling your experiences is a way of healing, and telling your story is a way of healing, and trying to find any way that we can have a support system and be a support system to one another. So that's where it came from, that we felt like there was not a place like that here in Portland, Maine. So we started, it was a very small group, and we met once a week. But now it's something that is huge. It has brought us to so many places, and it has helped so many Darfurian women here in Portland, and it has inspired others in other regions to also want to do something similar to that.
That's so kind to witness one another and just stand together. How many people live in Portland from Darfur?
There's about 25 to 30 families here in the Portland, Maine region.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that they're all members and part of the Sudanese community. Is that right?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, I see them often in the community providing services. We're just coming to be surrounded just by other people that are just like them. Mm-hmm. Especially when we have maybe a death in the community, they always are together and assisting each other, regardless of their background or regardless of their tribe. And also, if there's something that is a special or a celebratory event, they always are there also to celebrate with each other.
Yeah, helping each other get established.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. You said your friends often wonder why you're so involved in your community. What do you tell them? What drives you to work so hard in your organizing?
I just see the need of me, of someone like me doing all of the things that I do. I think I do it because I'm so passionate. I really think that being involved in the community has even helped me grow as an individual. And it has given me, they are a support system to me. And I wouldn't have done it without their support. So for me, being at home and isolating myself is not a solution. But for me to be involved in assisting in any way possible, especially for the youth, we are in the diaspora. This is a second home to all of us. And if you don't have a support system, then who do you have? So that's, I think, where I get my passion from, is that I understand this is our second home and we need each other to get through all of the obstacles that might come our way. So I want to volunteer. I want to know my community members. So whenever I need something, I can reach out to them. Or if they ever need anything, they know that they're more than welcome to reach out to me as well.
Well, that's you bringing forward the things you value from your community at home.
Certainly,
and
yeah.
Now you're doing it here.
Yeah.
Bringing that beautiful slice of Darfur to Portland, Maine.
Yeah, Darfur and also in Sudan. Sudan, if anybody has visited Sudan or if anybody is from Sudan, they know how there's such sense of community. The second you walk into Sudan, people know each other very well. They are always trying to ask each other how their day is doing, what do you need, or how is your life, basically. Mm. Just to have someone that checks on you on a regular basis is very beautiful. So that's what I want to bring here, and it has been working, and I see that my community members are happier that they have each other as a support system.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps people from being too isolated.
Yes.
When you were last back in Sudan visiting loved ones, you were changed and inspired. Can you tell us about what it is that you want to do next? How you're raising funds and
Oh, yes.
How people can help you?
I went to visit my family members back in Sudan, Darfur, in 2014 with my family. And it was a very, very beautiful experience. I got to connect with so many elements of my past. I went to visit the middle school and the elementary school and the kindergarten where I used to go. I got to visit my friends. I got to visit my family members. But most importantly, I got to visit my grandma and grandparents. It was such a beautiful moment to connect with them again after almost 10 or 11 years of being separated. It brought tears to our eyes. My mom was crying for days, and so was my grandmother, just to be connected with her daughter again. It was very, very touching and so beautiful.
Such joy.
Yes.
And also probably longing for all the time that you missed in between.
Very true. I mean, we do talk when we were here. We do talk on Skype, or talk on the phone, or Messenger, on Facebook. We get to see each other, but it's not the same as hugging that loved person.
No, it's not.
And I went and I visited one school that I visited in Sudan that is a community school for a lot of the local kids that was destroyed by the rain and all the bad weather that we have in Sudan. So the school was closing down. And I was just, my heart felt so bad that the school was going to closed down because they didn't have enough funds to continue supporting the local kids. And that school is meant for kids that don't, their parents don't have enough money, or they need to continue their education, but they don't have the funds of need. So I went and asked the principal of the school, why are you closing the school down? And he said, it's because they have money. So when I came back to the U.S., I've been thinking about them ever since and wanted to find any way that I could help to maybe open the school again, to help so many kids to get this gift of education, which I am so lucky and fortunate to be getting an education here. And I wanted to also help them in any way I can. So I talked to some of the students that I work with, and I'm like, what can we do as a fundraiser activity to help raise money? So we came up with this beautiful calendar called Celebrating Africa, where we featured 12 different countries from the African continent to help to help also here our community in Portland, Maine, to be aware of the beautiful culture and the richness that they bring to our communities, and also sell them so we can make some profit so we can send back to the school.
How much does each calendar cost?
Each of the one calendar costs $15.
Great. And how could people buy one?
They can buy one through me or through me.
Oh, there's that always that option to go through you.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't have any other way to sell them except just by, you know, face-to-face and sending that person, maybe via mail. I can send that as well.
Great. So if people were interested, could I link to a contact source for you so they could reach out if they were interested in calendars?
Yes, of course.
Okay, that sounds good. How much money do you need to raise in order to support the school?
I need to raise about $5,000 to help the school be built again.
And what are you up to so far?
So far, we're about halfway. We have about 2,700 that we've raised so far. So
that's really significant.
Yeah, I think so too.
You're well on your way.
Yes.
I'd love to help you along.
Thank you.
So I'm curious about the book you're writing. Would you be willing to read us a poem or a passage from The Bridge Between?
Yes. The Bridge Between started as an idea since I was in high school, because I was writing an essay or a presentation called The Final Word at Casco Bay High School as a senior. So that's the way to get outside and your final words before you go into college. And so I wrote about the bridge between because I feel like that I belong to two cultures and I am the bridge between both of them. So my poetry always reflects myself being the bridge between. Sometimes I write in Arabic and sometimes I write in English because I speak two languages and they are part of me. So the poem that I'm going to be sharing with you is called How Could We Forget You? I wrote it in Arabic and I wrote it after my trip coming back from Sudan.
Wonderful, I look forward to it.
أنحنا كيف ننساكم؟ أنحنا كيف ننساكم وانتم معانا في كل صباح وكل مساء وكل ليل بنتذكركم؟ مع كل صباح بنتذكر شمشة السودان الحارة اللي كان بيصحي الزول من أحلى أحلامه. مع كل صباح بنتذكر كوباية الشاي خالته زيادة سكر وبسكويت. مع كل صباح بنتذكر نتهة أدهم بالحيطة يقول يا تيتا. مع كل صباح بنتذكر جيشان الحوش وتصبيح لأطيب جيران. مع كل صباح بنتذكركم. مع كل مساء أكيد برضو بنتذكركم. مع كل مساء بنتذكر صينية فطورنا صحن الفول.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is you were bridging between there?
So, yes, when I came back, maybe 2 days after we came back, my cousins were trying to reach us. And we didn't have a phone. They didn't have a way to connect with us. So they thought maybe we landed in the U.S., but we already have forgotten about them. So it's dedication to them saying, how could we forget you? And how can we forget Shamshat al-Sudan, means the sun of Sudan, that was so hot that used to wakes us up from our sleeps. How could we forget auntie's cup of tea with extra sugar and biscuit cookies? This poem was just about the experience that I had with them, talking about our morning talks, talking about how we used to greet our neighbors in the morning, talking about the noise and all of the things that happen in Sudan during the daytime, and how could we forget our plate of food that we used to eat together.
That's very sweet. I'm sure they love that.
Yes.
They must be very proud of you. So, Eklas, you are astonishing. Your grace, intellect, and passion belie your young age. You're a force for kindness and good, putting yourself out there to educate and change negative stereotypes. I think no one could be more convincing than you. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for allowing me to share part of my story with you guys.
Loved it.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com. And check out related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Ekhlas Ahmed. What song will you be closing today's show with?
This song is called In the Diaspora. It is written and the song is in Arabic by one of my favorite song singer. His name is Hussein As-Sadiq.
Thank you.
سافرنا وسفر الغربة رحدلنا وبالليل يا هلا وبالليل يا هلا I'm